And in the UK, nearly a third of the Labour Party's lawmakers defy their leader to back the Gaza ceasefire motion as a pro-Palestinian demo is held outside Parliament. Hello and welcome everybody to Israeli Genocide, and the Gaza Strip has entered its 41st day as the regime keeps pounding the blockaded territory with airstrikes. Israel is now pressing ahead with its raid on Al-Shifa Hospital, which has turned into the focal point of its deadly raids. According to Gaza health officials, Israeli army's bulldozers and tanks have destroyed parts of the southern entrance to the medical complex. Local sources said Israeli bulldozers and tanks have also raided the complex's western entrance. The regime's military has confirmed that its raid on the facility, which started on Wednesday, is still ongoing. Hospital officials and doctors say the complex's water reserve has been nearly depleted, putting the lives of patients and people sheltering there at risk. They have also rejected Israeli claims of delivering medical aid to Al-Shifa, saying the regime's forces are deliberately sabotaging the existing equipment. Israeli forces entered the complex, claiming that it was atop a military command center of Hamas resistance movement. Hamas, however, has categorically denied the regime's allegations, saying Israel lies about finding weapons at the complex. Almost 6 weeks have passed since Israel launched its war on Gaza, leading to the destruction and shutting down of even health facilities. A UN agency says only one hospital is now functioning in the northern part of the besieged strip. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says out of 24 hospitals and clinics in northern Gaza, only one is receiving patients. It says 18 hospitals have shut down and evacuated, while another five only provide limited care to patients already admitted, including Al-Shifa Hospital. Lack of power, oxygen, medical equipment, and bombardments have been cited as reasons for their closure. According to the UN, three hospitals shut in the past 3 days alone. The situation has left medical workers struggling to keep patients, including premature babies, alive. The UN says even the Palestinian Red Cross is unable to respond to calls for help to save those who remain trapped under the rubble. The Israeli military says it has killed three Palestinians near Al-Quds after they allegedly opened fire at its forces. According to the Israeli military, at least seven troops were wounded, one critically, in the Palestinians' shooting operation. The incident took place at a checkpoint guarding access to road tunnels linking the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The regime has intensified its bloody attacks on the West Bank. More than 190 Palestinians have been killed by Israel's forces and settlers across the occupied territory since October the 7th. That's when the regime began its onslaught against the besieged Gaza Strip. The international outcry against Israel's brutal war on Gaza continues to grow, with people holding new mass rallies worldwide to show support for the Palestinians. In Washington, protesters and police faced off outside the Democratic National Headquarters as pro-Palestine groups flooded the vicinity. The protesters were calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. Police evacuated the area after making some arrests. An anti-Zionist Jewish group has accused the police of violently assaulting peaceful protesters. Elsewhere in the British capital, London, protesters rallied outside Parliament demanding lawmakers back a ceasefire in Gaza, carrying Palestinian flags. The crowd criticized the politicians for their inaction. Also in Jordan's capital, Amman, security forces mobilized to guard the U.S. embassy as hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters gathered near the facility. The protesters condemned Israeli raids on Al-Shifa Hospital as well as the U.S. support for the regime's atrocities. In the U.K., nearly a third of the Labour Party's lawmakers have defied their leader to back Gaza ceasefire motions. The move further revealed divisions within the party over Britain's approach to Israel's devastating war on the Gaza Strip. On Wednesday, 56 Labour lawmakers voted along with the Scottish National Party in favour of two ceasefire motions at the House of Commons. The voters included several high-profile MPs. Labour leader Keir Starmer had threatened to sack any shadow minister who would support the motions. This came despite the fact that a majority of the British people have been calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The motion put forth by the Scottish Party called for an end to the collective punishment of the Palestinian people while demanding the government work for a ceasefire. Syed Pourreza is joining us now from the British capital, London. Syed, it's great to see you again. Please walk us through what took place as nearly a third of Labour Party lawmakers have defied their leader to back the Gaza ceasefire motions. Talk to us about this chasm with regards to the Gaza war.
Exactly, Barry. A chasm is the right word. The vote happened yesterday, 7 p.m. We were there as several thousand people gathered outside Parliament chanting ceasefire now for the entirety of the couple of hours that they were there, hoping that they would have some kind of an impact on the outcome of the vote yesterday. There were two amendments that were tabled yesterday, debated in Parliament's House of Commons, one by the SNP, the Scottish National Party, that called for an immediate ceasefire. In Scotland, it was supported by the First Minister, Hamza Youssef, who also called on the Labour Party leader there, Sarwar, to push the Labour politicians to vote for it in the British Parliament. But there was another one as well, tabled by Labour under Keir Starmer, that only called for a durable cessation of fighting as soon as possible. The wording, of course, is important. We have known the Labour Party's position on what is happening in the Gaza Strip, which was a humanitarian pause. They only changed the wording to durable cessation of fighting just to prevent a mutiny, a rebellion by the Labour front benchers inside the Parliament. But what we saw happen was neither of those two motions or amendments gained the required voting. Of course, even if they had, they wouldn't really have much of an impact in terms of wrapping the government's hands behind its back, because the UK government's position under this Conservative Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, remains the same, which is still humanitarian pauses short of a ceasefire. As that happened, as they say, there were protesters outside, and the chant was, shame on you, to the MPs who refused to vote for the SNP amendment to the King's Speech that called for an immediate ceasefire. Since then, we have seen 56 Labour MPs backing SNP. Eight shadow ministers have resigned their frontbench positions as a result, making the number of shadow ministers who have resigned so far 10. And that, of course, was a 293 to 125 vote for these two motions. Now, Hamza Youssef, again, the Scottish First Minister, has said that he was beyond angry at the result of this vote. But again, what I saw and heard the demonstrators there say was that they were going to come back, that they were not going to stop their campaigning, that they would continue doing so, as they have over the past few weeks, every single weekend, still coming out again last night in massive numbers, a respectable, sizable crowd for a weekday. So what we're going to see moving forward in the days and weeks ahead, more protests taking place across the British capital and the country as the killing of Palestinians in Gaza continues. Bardia.
Thanks a lot, Syed Pourreza, joining us from the British capital, London. Now joining us from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad, we have founding executive director at the Center for International Strategic Studies and former Pakistani ambassador to the United Nations, Mr. Ali Sarwar Naqvi. Mr. Ambassador, welcome to the program. Let's start off with the international response, international bodies' response, like the United Nations, to the ongoing massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. Why is the United Nations sitting idly by?
You see, the basic problem is that the United Nations can be effective and functional only if all its members desire to do so. Then, in the Security Council, there is the discriminatory process of those members who are permanent, and they can veto any resolution. So, effectively, they make the Security Council totally impractical and ineffective to work with. So the international community has its own politics. Each country follows its own national interest. And the glaring tragedy of Gaza, where thousands of people have already died, men and women are dying, and the entire landscape is being bombarded and razed to the ground. All this is being ignored by the international community because of these very short-term and short-sighted objectives of national interest. And it is an indictment of the international community that it has not been able to do anything so far.
So if the likes of the United Nations can't take action, then we have to turn our attention to bodies like the ICC or the ICJ. There is invoking of a genocide commission within the ICJ, which can be invoked by member countries. There's also the ICC, where countries like Algeria have called for opening of a case of genocide against the Palestinians, against the Palestinians in Gaza being carried out by the Israeli regime. Colombia has also voiced support for that call by Algeria. What about the direction that those international bodies can take when there's non-compliance by the likes of the Israelis, when there's pressure on behalf of the United States to these bodies where they are not allowed to pursue such motions? And how can they intervene? How can there be consequences to the killing of women and children, to the massacring of innocent children, to bombing schools, to bombing hospitals, to even bombing UN shelters by the Israelis?
Well, yes, you have put your finger on the problem that exists, and that is the ICJ has no enforcement authority. The ICJ can only give advisory opinion. It cannot compel a state to take action this way or that. Similarly, the International Criminal Court is an advisory court which can indict a person or a country or a group of people, but it cannot take any action against whatever entity it has indicted. So the result is that these two bodies are effectively unable to do anything to stop what is going on in Gaza. The population of Gaza is at the mercy of the Israeli authorities, who are hell-bent on completely eradicating the Gazan people, and therefore they are guilty of genocide. Genocide is the systematic elimination of an entire people by killing and by destroying whatever they have, their houses, their property, and in this way tracing, completely wiping out all traces of their existence. And this is a unfortunate and in fact a tragic development in regard to what is happening to Gaza, and the rest of the world cannot do anything about it.
Right, this is very tragic, as you mentioned. So based on what you said, the United Nations, in some way, we can say that in terms of situations like this, it's dysfunctional because all members have to agree specifically with the United Nations Security Council. The United States support for Israel will not allow that to happen. You also mentioned that the bodies like the ICJ and the ICC are ineffective in situations like this. So then we have to turn our attention to other regional bodies. For example, we can talk about Arab governments and Islamic countries. They should be, would you agree that they should be more involved? They should be giving a collective response To the Israelis, to put more pressure on the Israelis. Those countries that have normalized relations with the Israeli regime, they have the option of scrapping the normalization deals. Other countries have the options of recalling their ambassadors. Why aren't we seeing that form of collective response from Arab and Muslim countries in the face of the Israeli crimes that are being committed?
Well, that is the unfortunate thing, that the Arab countries and the Muslim countries as a whole are not doing anything to stop what's going on in Gaza. The only time that I remember that the Arab countries got together to take action against the West was in 1973, and that was when they established the oil embargo against the West. And I remember that in London there were long queues of cars because they could not get any gasoline or petrol. So if the Muslim countries decide to act collectively on this particular problem, and they have convened a meeting and they have held a summit meeting of OIC and Arab League, but those bodies have not recommended direct action by the Muslim countries, because those people who have been involved in the drafting of the resolution have just stopped short of taking action, of calling for some action. They have basically condemned the action of Israel, but they have not recommended any concrete step to deal with it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your time, sir. Ali Sarwar Navi, founding executive director at the Center for International Strategic Studies and former Pakistani ambassador to the UN, joining us from Islamabad. Thank you, sir. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب الله. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. The issue of Palestine is the world of Islam's top priority, November 23, 2017. Today, the issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam. Anyone who has a correct understanding of the issue of Palestine acknowledges that the issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam. The key to defeating the enemies of Islam is the issue of Palestine. The most important issue of the world of Islam in the present time is the issue of Palestine. Why is that? This is because Palestine is an Islamic country. They have come and occupied this country. They have taken it away from its people. The issue is not about usurping a village or a city. The enemy has usurped a country, and it has used it as a base for jeopardizing the security of regional countries. One should fight against a cancerous tumor. Notice that if a person issues a fatwa as a religious mufti saying that the fighting against Zionism is haram, that helping such and such a group which is fighting against Zionism is not allowed, this is really a disaster to witness that some people in the world of Islam are acting against the interest of Islam and have friendly relations with the enemies. This is the exact opposite of the Quran's clear words. Those who are with him are strong against unbelievers, but compassionate among each other. The Holy Quran, chapter 48, verse 29. However, those people are strong against Muslims, but compassionate among unbelievers. They are on good terms with them, but notice what they are doing to Muslims.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Forgetting the issue of Palestine is the enemy's goal. December 17, 2016. If Muslims are united, Palestine will not be in the situation that it is in now. Today, Palestine is in a difficult situation. Gaza and the West Bank are in a difficult situation, both in different ways. Today, the people of Palestine are under serious pressures on a daily basis. They want to erase the issue of Palestine from the minds of people and co-sign it to oblivion. They want to, as they say, busy the West Asian region, including our own countries. This is an extraordinarily sensitive and strategic region. It is a sensitive region in terms of geography, natural resources, and sea passageways with themselves. They want Muslims to stand up against Muslims and Arabs against Arabs. They want them to target and destroy one another so that the armies of Muslim countries, particularly those armies that are neighboring the Zionists, weaken on a daily basis. This is their goal.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you for bringing me home.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The Israeli carnage in the Gaza Strip continues to rack up deaths, especially women and children. But Israel is also impacted by its genocidal war when it comes to its international standing, putting into doubt its legitimacy. Ireland's opposition party has strongly blasted the regime, accusing it of committing barbaric and cowardly war crimes.
The world sees Israeli actions for what they are: barbaric, hateful, cowardly war crimes.
Strong words from the leader of Ireland's opposition party. The Brazilian president relayed his disgust on Israeli crimes when it came to hospitals being targeted.
I'd never heard of children being the preferred victims of a war. The number of women and children who have already died and the number of children who have gone missing is unheard of in any other war.
Hospitals have become a focal point of the war. The Israeli military shared video and photographs showing what it said were weapons stored by Hamas in the basement of a children's hospital in Gaza, where it also said hostages appear to have been held.
And we also found signs that indicate that Hamas held hostages here. This is currently under our investigation, but we also have intelligence that verifies it.
Currently under our investigation is another way of Israel saying that it is not sure. At the same time, it is trying to portray itself as a good Samaritan by delivering fuel to the hospitals. But this amount of fuel is just a drop in the bucket, way too short of what hospitals need. Yet Israel got a boost on its war efforts when the U.S. President Joe Biden said that hospitals in the Gaza Strip must be protected.
Well, I have not been reluctant in expressing my concerns what's going on. And it's my hope and expectation that there will be less intrusive action relative to the hospital.
Biden said he was hoping for less intrusive action by Israel. That was another way of saying that he supported Israel's military operation against the hospitals. The more Israel's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip continues, the more it will come at a cost for Israel and its supporters. The Israeli foreign minister gave his idea of a timeline of when the war may end. He said that Israel has between 2 and 3 weeks left before international pressure intensifies.
Ceasefire now!
Before it intensifies? By many accounts, that threshold has been passed already, evident through the mass worldwide protests. But the real question remains, what are Israel's plans for Palestinians? A host of Israeli officials have made statements recently which reveal what those plans may be. Israeli Minister Smotrich said on X that he supports voluntary migration of Palestinians in Gaza as the right humanitarian solution. Dani Danan, former ambassador to the UN, and Ram Bin Barak, former deputy director of the Mossad, published a commentary in the Wall Street Journal suggesting moving some people of Gaza to nations that will accept them. And the former director of Israel's spy agency, Shin Bet, who is currently serving as the Minister of Agriculture, said that Tel Aviv was rolling out a Nakba in the Gaza Strip. Let's not forget, Israel has denied that a Nakba ever took place. Furthermore, in 2011, Israel enacted a Nakba law that authorized the withdrawal of state funds from organizations that discussed the Nakba.
The Israeli minister has claimed that dropping a nuclear bomb on the blockaded Gaza Strip is an option. The Israeli heritage minister, Eliyahu, made the remarks in an interview with Radio Kol Barama. Eliyahu also insisted that allowing any humanitarian aid into Gaza was wrong, claiming there is no such thing as uninvolved civilians in Gaza, calling the innocent civilian population in Gaza Nazis. Following the remarks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu suspended the minister from cabinet meetings. Hamas resistance movement, however, pointed out that Eliyahu's remarks were reflective of the Netanyahu regime's genocidal mindset.
The statement by what is called the Israeli heritage minister in the Zionist cabinet that throwing a nuclear weapon on the Gaza Strip is one of the solutions didn't come out of nowhere, but it is an expression on the level of decadence, Nazism and sadism that takes place in the minds of the cabinet of the occupying entity that is based on murder and genocide.
The remarks also drew condemnation from around the Arab world, and Iran called for a swift international response. The United Nations Security Council and the International Atomic Energy Agency must take immediate and uninterrupted action to disarm this barbaric and apartheid regime. Russia has joined a chorus of condemnation that was sparked over controversial remarks made by an Israeli minister about the regime's openness to a nuclear strike in the Gaza Strip. Maria Zakharova, Russia's foreign ministry spokeswoman, said that the main issue was that Israel appeared to have admitted that it had nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and other Arab states have all denounced the comments. Arab League Secretary General Ahmed Abul Qait has said the remarks revealed that Israel possesses nuclear weapons, which is an open secret. He also added that the comments also confirm the truth of the racist view Israelis hold against Palestinians. Since Israel's war began on Gaza on October the 7th, the Israeli military has dropped more than 25,000 tons of explosives on Gaza, equivalent in power to two of the nuclear bombs used on Hiroshima. Euromed Human Rights Monitor has said Israel has admitted to bombing over 12,000 targets in the Gaza Strip, with a record tally of bombs exceeding 10 kilograms of explosives per individual. Israel's use of internationally banned weapons in its attacks on the Gaza Strip has also been documented, especially the use of cluster and phosphorus bombs. The Israeli regime is estimated to possess 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the sole possessor of non-conventional arms in the Middle East and the wider West Asia region. Tel Aviv, however, neither admits nor denies owning the weapons under a policy of deliberate nuclear ambiguity. It has also defied international calls for it to sign the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, the NPT, something that further corroborates its running of an offensive nuclear weapons program. The United Nations General Assembly has already backed a resolution urging the regime to give up its nuclear weapons and join the NPT.
Gaza Strip skyline. Israel's bombing campaign continues. An apocalyptic scene. It appears Israel is using the banned white phosphorus bombs again. bombs which burns the skin down to the bone. The death toll continues to mount, like at the Al-Maghazi camp. 51 Palestinians murdered. Another massacre on top of the others. Genocide on speed. The cries over the loss of a beloved one. Which is why people are angry worldwide. But the biggest rally for Palestinians ever to have taken place in Washington, D.C. The war is coming at a cost for Israel. Diplomatically, Bolivia cut off relations with Israel, with Turkey, Colombia, Chad, and Honduras recalling their ambassadors. Persian Gulf Arab leaders meeting with the U.S. Secretary of State. They all called for a ceasefire, but Blinken did not blink. No to a ceasefire, and on a humanitarian pause, a big maybe.
It's our view that a ceasefire now would simply leave Hamas in place.
Yet Blinken had only echoed Netanyahu's statements on a ceasefire.
Calls for a ceasefire are calls for Israel to surrender to Hamas.
David Petraeus, the retired general of the U.S. Army, responsible in part for his failure in Afghanistan and also in Iraq, in a leaked audio file, encouraged and approved Israel's carnage in Gaza.
I see no alternative to the destruction of Hamas, and I use that term specifically because, as Aviv knows, there's a military doctrinal term. It's a gradation. You know, you can disrupt, you can deny, you can defeat, you can destroy.
But he must not have been prepared for what an Israeli minister said when asked whether an atomic bomb should be dropped on the Gaza Strip. Amihai Eliyahu said this is one of the possibilities. Let's not forget, the Gaza Strip has already been hit by an atomic bomb. But not at once. Slowly, 25,000 tons dropped on the Strip so far. The resistance fighters slammed these comments as reflective of the evil and terrorist nature of the regime, while they fought street battles against the Israeli regime forces. Israel has suffered casualties as a result. The tide may be turning, with costs mounting for the U.S. and Israel. For Israel, the worldwide anti-Israel protests have shattered its image. These protests have also worked against the U.S.
It's definitely ceasefire. People are getting killed every minute.
In the U.S., there are worries about the aftermath of the war. It's time for Israel's friends to recognize that the current operational approach is causing an unacceptable level of civilian harm and does not appear likely to achieve the goal of permanently ending the threat from Hamas, is what this high-ranking senator said. In other words, the U.S. is at the phase of the war where people are starting to worry about how they will look when this is over. And they are worried about votes also, as cynical as that sounds. Muslim and Arab American groups have threatened to not vote for Biden in 2024. This includes Democratic Party leaders from contested states that can decide elections, such as Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. That, combined with the sanctioning of Israeli products, which has also gained traction, especially amongst the Generation Zs in the U.S., and not just in the U.S., but around the world.
This is IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio. With you
every single moment.
The Last Savior.
Oh, the Savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
Light of Allah.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is The Last Savior from IRIB English Radio. I'm Mustafa as your host, and with me is Brother Alavi in the studio. He has a PhD in philosophy and is an Islamic researcher. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
How are you doing?
Thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Thank you so much. So, brother, we were discussing our duties during the time of the occultation of the 12th Imam and what we can do during this time. And we've been discussing many different topics during these episodes. One of the, I think, big questions that came to my mind, you know, through these discussions that I really wanted to ask is, we have this image in our mind, you know, that once the Imam comes, we'll be living in this sort of paradise or utopia, everything will be just. But considering human nature, it just seems too good to be true almost, right? Mm. I mean, my question is, will there be any resistance? Will there be oppression? You know, there must be something going on. Mm. What do we know about that?
Yeah. Look, when we are talking about that utopia that inshallah Imam Mahdi alayhi salam will introduce to the world, about the characteristics of his government and the leadership of an infallible imam and rulership of this just imam, we are talking about the characteristics of this government, not the people. I mean, look, people, if they are interested, they can increase their knowledge, they can increase their ma'rifa, their science, and they can benefit, I mean, very easily, because everything is already there, I mean, available for them to use. But to see that if, in a sense, there would be any sort of sin to be committed, any sort of oppression to happen, any sort of, let's say, distortion to happen, these are the things that usually happen due to the personal desires of the people.
Right.
And the desires of the people are always there, and they have been in the course of history. Allah is not going to, for example, change my own personal desire and yours as well. For example, to take, okay, from now on, everything should be clear, and now, from now on, you should have to only think positively.
Right.
The people are the people. I mean, but they are going to benefit from a source of blessing. Among the nations that Imam is going to lead in this universe, there would be different kinds of people.
Right.
There might be some, for example, oppressors among the people, but not in the level of the government.
I see.
The government is going to establish justice there.
I see. So what you're saying is that the people will still have the same desires.
They may sin as they still do, of course. Like, or in life they have. For example, they might commit sin, but in case they want to get perfected and find their way towards this voyage of perfection, it's quite available.
The opportunities will be there. There will be justice at a societal level.
Yeah, but if a distortion is going to happen again in Islamic basis and principles, because an-din 'inda Allah al-Islam, the religion in Allah's presence is Islam.
Right.
So if any distortion is going to happen, no, there is a firm, just government that is actually stopping people from going astray, right?
Right, right.
But this oppressions might happen, these distortions might happen. Even, let me give you an example. At the time of global and universal government of Prophet Suleiman,
yeah,
many people were after finding some ways to make some magics among the people, just to break the relationship between a husband.
Right. This is from the Quran, right?
Yeah,
this is what Allah mentioned this specifically.
To break the relationships of the couples.
Right.
So it happened at the time of Solomon the Prophet, but he could stop them from doing that, from going astray. But because the government is just. I mean, if they refer to government to complain from a person, from an entity, so everything is available for them to find the justice. Again,
Sorry, I'm going to have to stop you right there because we have to go for a break. Sure. And sorry about, we'll continue right when we're back.
I can feel your eyes like the sun shining behind the clouds. I need a morning to shatter this long night forever. I need a hero to stop this thousand-year-old
So we were discussing once the imam arrives, you know, we were saying that there will be oppression, maybe there may be distortion, but because there will be a just government, they will be there to prevent it from maybe increasing and they'll be able to control it and contain it. Is that correct?
Very true.
You were going to make another point, I believe.
Yeah, I want to even give you another surprising point that we are waiting for Imam to come and make the religion of God into only one, that is Al-Islam. Based on some narrations, we find even like the city-state model that the Holy Prophet introduced to the world, and this was a just model, that he himself was the head of that government.
Right.
We see that there were some Jews living there, there were some Christians living at his state. Right? Even there is a possibility of, based on some narrations, the possibility of some Jews and Christians living at the time of Imam, but they're benefiting and favoring and enjoying from a just government.
That
because
makes sense.
Islam is not going to impose Islam into their minds and to change their own beliefs. They have, as I told you, they have this opportunity. Everything is ready for them to come and accept and agree.
You know, I always thought that we have so many different religions that to me, it didn't make logical sense that everyone would, like, for example, become Muslim.
Overnight.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that would be the case, that the imam would possibly have treaties, have, you know, peace treaties with other... Why would he fight with people, for example, right?
Yeah.
But I would only assume that he would... I don't want to go into another topic, but, you know, he would just fight people in defensive form, just like the Prophet did.
Very true.
Right? Otherwise, he would
be imagine the same way that the people referred to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam or other imams from different religions. They came to him. But Imam respected all those people because all belong to the realm of rulership of these imams.
Yeah, yeah.
But if these words are good to be used, because they are, I mean, imams are not taking these terms or these concepts in a materialistic way. When I'm talking about realms or, let's say, rulership, it does not mean materialistically speaking. But I mean, because they are all belonging to the creatures of God and they are the representative of God and this, you know, the caliphs of God.
I want to challenge you now. Sure. Okay? You brought up Prophet Sulaiman, right?
Yeah.
In Prophet Sulaiman's story, there is a very famous where he sends a letter to the queen of, I believe, what was the name of the town? Is it Sheba?
Bilqis,
right? And in that, he almost forces her to, he says, you know, if you don't come towards me, I'm going to come and crush you guys, right? Or is my understanding incorrect of that? I mean, I guess I'm trying to ask you is that you're saying that the imam would allow other religions or other people to exist, whereas we've seen Prophet Sulaiman's story, he didn't force them, but he definitely... Well, how do you explain that, I guess?
Look, he did not force them to change their beliefs, to change their methods of acting with people, right? But it doesn't have anything to do with their beliefs to change it. Then when he found that Sulaiman was that kind and merciful, they themselves, voluntarily changed their own beliefs.
So the stories now are consistent.
Yeah,
yes,
but I think it has to be a little bit with care because it is Quran. We need to be careful.
Yeah. We don't want to go off completely off the topic. What would you say is something that we can relate to right now? In terms of what we're talking about, I think there's things that we can relate to in our lives right now, right? In terms of distortions that are happening in religion right now, and oppression that is happening right now. Do you see those examples around you in current times that we can relate to?
Look, there are many examples of oppression and distortions happening in our time here and even in the past. And even they might happen at the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, even at the time of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. But the difference is, as I was explaining, if even today in this Islamic government that we are living in, if you refer to a court, but you see at the end of the day the vote that has been issued and decreed is against what you think and what you imagine, and even if even you might find it even anti-religious basis right. from your own perspective, right?
Right.
But from the Islamic judge who is sitting there, I mean, and judging that, he believes that no, he issued and decreed an Islamic rule for you and or Islamic decree for you. But okay. this deficiency would not exist at the time of Imam Ali.
I see.
Everywhere I see. You find justice. Yes, you find a distortion. You refer to and you make a complaint against them, and you refer them to, for example, a court case.
Mm-hmm.
But the result would be beautiful. The result would be sweet for the people to find that they're sensing this beauty.
The system works.
The system works.
Yeah. So we'll have to go for a break, and we'll come back for the discussion right afterwards.
True.
Okay, so right before the break, we were saying, you know, the system, the justice system will work, and that will be the beautiful side of the Imam system. And that will prevent a lot of the oppression and distortion from expanding, from corrupting the society, for example. You know, I was just thinking that we become so accustomed to corruption
mm-hmm.
that it sounds almost unbelievable, you know, mm-hmm. that something like that can even happen. But even when it happens today, though, we find that people are attracted to it, right? When we hear a case where justice took place, we do feel happy towards it, and we're excited about that.
Mm.
And one thing, for example, that we used to hear when I was younger, you know, where I grew up, is that we used to hear, you know, that the Western societies are, for example, very just, mm-hmm. you know, that they give justice. And that was a means of attracting people to those societies, right?
True.
You're saying that in the future, the Imam will be that attraction. Mm-hmm. He will be, it won't be that fake justice that the West is offering, it'll be real justice that that he'll be offering us. Are there any other points, any other things that you would like to tell us that you think we should know about, you know, during those times before we finish this discussion?
Actually, one of the names of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam is Adl, that is justice.
Right.
That is, we even in the supplications, we recite As-salamu ala al-adl al-muntadhar. That is awaiting justice to come. So, actually, he's going to complete the mission that has started from Adam alayhi salam, from the beginning of the creation. So, whatever was missing in the missions of the prophets, or there were some obstacles, and the implementation of it for the people. Because human being is in thirst of justice rather than anything else.
Right.
Even more than he's in thirst of water and food and in need of these things, he's in thirst of justice. So Imam comes for that very important cause to happen. So when people see the change, they will get happy. They will get satisfied with what has been introduced and presented to them.
Definitely. I think I agree with you that today we are suffering because in all of the systems that we see, there are problems, there are faults, there are mistakes, there's corruption. And we all pray for the reappearance of the Imam to remove this suffering.
And this is the reason that we have actually, we prioritized other systems over the systems of Imamate in the course of history. We chose another way to go. And we ourselves deprived ourselves from his presence. If we get ready, he will come.
Yes.
And he is more interested for us to come rather than us to him.
Yes. So the way is for us to also implement
very
justice
true.
In our lives. Thank you so much. Welcome. Inshallah, until our next episode. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Where is the rising sun? Where is the spring of life? Where is the shining?
the occupation of Palestine in cinema pictures.
Part 1.
May 15th, 1948. The last British ship had not yet faded away when Ben-Gurion announced the establishment of so-called State of Israel in a speech broadcast by the media.
For us, it is the most tragic moment in our history. Will be re-established the old United Nations in the mandatory power of England as a free Jewish commonwealth where all inhabitants...
Skirmish began. Arab armies crossed over the borders to reach the battlefield in support of Palestinians. Finally, after a year of conflict on all fronts, they retreated, and contrary to expectations, the ground was prepared for the acceptance of the usurped government in the United Nations. May 15, 1948 became known as Nakba Day. The day when the occupiers finally put their seal on the Holy Land. But the truth of the matter is that Palestine was conquered by Zionist filmmakers for the first time in cinema frames. This documentary is a story of the occupation of Palestine in cinema pictures and the struggle and effort by Palestinian filmmakers to recapture their country through the lens. When the train passed the last curve, the city could be seen in the distance. The inventors of cinema had come to the east. The Lumiere brothers were the first passengers who got off the train at Hahn Station. Pretty soon, the anchorages and the crowded markets, the men scorched under the sun, and ancient shrines moved in front of the camera of the Lumieres. It was the most popular land in the world, the Holy Land, Palestine. For centuries, the most famous warriors in history had drawn their swords in the dream of ruling this land. But from that day, the war was dragged into the cinema frames. After the Lumiere brothers, Christian film production teams arrived one after the other. To the land where Jesus Christ was once born, lived, and crucified. When the cameramen were making sneak peeks everywhere to find footprints of Jesus and were presenting a Christian narrative of Palestine, a new rival entered the scene and announced its bid for Palestine. Murray Rosenberg, a Jewish immigrant, made a